Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Fran Lewis from sunny upstate New York. It's gorgeous outside. It was raining this morning, but it's nice. And the sun seems to be shining. And we have a really special guest today. A fantastic book called The Preservationist by Justin Kramen. And I'm not going to say anything other than the fact that it is, as it says on the back cover, a page-turning psychological thriller. And once you start reading this, if you're anything like me, you're going to finish it in less than 2 hours. You're not going to be able to put it down, and you are going to get scared because it's kind of scary. So I'm going to introduce the author and let him tell you about it. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Fran. Great to get to talk to you. And I'm really pleased that you are able to finish the book in 2 hours, and that if other readers are able to do it, if I was able to do it, it would probably be increasing my ability to read a little bit faster than I normally do. So that's an extra plug, is that it, you know, increases your reading comprehension. So that's
exactly,
nice to hear.
Exactly.
But it's great to get to talk to you. And the book is, like you said, it's a psychological thriller that really was inspired by some of the classic psychological thrillers that I love. And I spent probably about a year where I was really reading a lot of these books, reading crime stories, mysteries, suspense novels. And in some ways, I had read some before, but I hadn't really immersed myself in it as much. And this was it's kind of a tribute to some of those books that I just fell in love with, and I felt like it opened up a whole new kind of area for literature for me, and also brought me back to other books that I love. It just is a great thing, I think, that novels can sometimes do, is just open you up to the world, to different kinds of characters and situations, and that was the hope with this book, was to kind of pay tribute to those books that I loved and bring in some other types of characters and situations in writing that I love as well.
Did you model these particular characters after any character in a specific book?
It wasn't so much that I modeled the characters because, I mean, a big thing for me is I spent a lot of time just writing in notebooks and just taking notes about characters and trying to get to someone who feels individual, like you know, like a unique person, and that's a big part of the process for me. So I kind of fill these insane notebooks of things which would be hard to even describe, of monologues from the characters, of discussions, scenes between them. You know, I might spend a day writing what one of the characters, you know, keeps in his drawers or in his closet. Definitely did that with Sam in this book, who kind of collects a lot of things, and. So that part was more my kind of desperately groping around trying to find that those individual characters. That's a big part of the writing process for me. But then I would say just kind of the structure of it and idea of it was inspired by some other books. I mean, I think particularly I love the classic The Talented Mr. Ripley, which I'm sure you've read, and you know, they made the movie of that and everything, and that idea of just going so deeply into the world of someone who, on the surface, the life may seem kind of odd or strange, but having that start to feel more familiar to the reader over time, that kind of like blurring the lines between what's odd and what's familiar, and I loved how that book did that. So I was interested in that book. There was a great thriller a while ago that was called The Collector by John Fowles. I think it was his first book, and he did a wonderful kind of entering in the mind of someone who was just kind of, I'd say, someone who's off at the margins, let's say, and that kind of thing. That being able to do that in a book is so much fun. I think, you know, we were talking just before the show about that idea of how a book can kind of make you sympathize with people who you would be pretty disturbed to sympathize with in your real life, you know? And so I think that's one of the great things that books can do, and you can actually feel comfortable sympathizing with someone who you might kind of keep your distance from in real life, but it's interesting to see into that person's life. So, I mean, to give listeners a little bit of background, the book is it starts with an unlikely romance between two people who are very different from each other, and it seems kind of sweet at first if maybe strange. But over time, that or pretty quickly in the book, I guess, that relationship begins to be threatened by violence, and it's not clear where that's coming from or who you can trust. And so there are three main characters in the book, and basically I spent a lot of time just going into the worlds of each as this threat of violence kind of escalates in the book. And so really, yeah, a lot of the fun of it was just that being able to immerse myself in a life that, like I said, to readers might feel a little odd, and then kind of pulling you closer and closer to that so that you're not quite sure, you know, what to think about people. That kind of questioning is kind of an interesting thing, I feel like, in books.
Well, that's the truth, because as you're getting to know all of them, you don't really know which one is doing what.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps you guessing, like, I don't get, you know, like, is it this one that's really doing all those evil things, or is it that one that's doing all mm-hmm. of the evil things? And then when you think you know, something else happens and you're really not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was part of the fun of doing it, too, was this thing where a character could seem one way and then change to the reader, but also that not knowing allows you to not necessarily kind of, a lot of times I feel like in books sometimes you're pulled into the camp of one character and then you're just there the whole book, but I think the hope with this book was that you kind of are shifting around as you go, and so that kind of openness about who's doing what allows you to maybe feel for somebody in one circumstance and then pull back and feel for another person somewhere else, and that that kind of shifting allegiance, I think, was something that was interesting to me.
Well, Julia's the girl character. We won't talk about the others. Why is she so... She seems very naive.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Respect. Yeah.
That's true. I think I present pretty early on in the book that Julia is suffering from the after effects of a kind of tragic event in her life. And she's kind of reeling from that. I mean, she doesn't know, you know, exactly what to do. I think there's a big effort on her part to seem like everything's fine and seem like things are normal. And as you get into the book, you kind of find out more and more of stuff that happened to her that has just thrown her off. And then I would say, you know, from that, her decision-making abilities have been weakened, let's say, a bit, and her ability to judge people. And, you know, I think as most people who, you know, everyone has had those kind of difficult times, and they're different for different people, and they're of different difficulties for different people. But and some things are obviously, you know, some bad events are worse for some people or than others. But the thing with Julia, I would say, is that she, I think people can know that kind of feeling where you are just kind of scrambling to stay on the surface. You're kind of keep trying to keep your head above water, and that's a lot where she is, I think, when the book opens. And then all the kind of normal stuff and cues that you might see, you know, at another time in your life when you're kind of have everything together, those kind of sort of disappear for you when you're really just trying to keep your head above water.
Yeah, well, I don't want to bring in the other cat, the bad guy.
We can talk about them a little bit. I mean,
I didn't want to really. Well, she meets him at the beginning. Well, she meets two people at the beginning.
Yeah.
And yet there are a lot of red flags there, but she doesn't really want to see them. I think she just wants the comfort of somebody that's going to be close to her.
That's right. And part of what the book does is it's taking you into the heads of all the three main characters. And there's these two men that kind of, in early on in the book, kind of present the main threat, and she's not sure really which one it is. And and a lot of the stuff that we see, you know, as a reader, what's kind of hopefully fun about it is that you get that you get to see more than any one of the characters can see. So you know, we see little things that might kind of tip us off a little bit in one direction, and then you know, Julia, you know, sees something else. And I think also on top of everything, it's always just, I think Julia has a hard time believing that another horrible thing or something like this could be happening to her. So it kind of just it blinds her to it a little bit, and that so it kind of just allowed me, having a character that was in this place in her life, it allowed me to kind of get everyone into a situation that had a lot of different angles and dangers and possibilities to it early in the book, which was what makes it fun. I mean, I hope part of what I wanted to do in the book was start the book as close to the action as I could, rather than doing a really long time, you know, in everyone's childhood and building them up to this and everything. I really wanted to kind of, like you said, I start the book when Julia really meets Sam, and then is, you know, kind of just getting to know Marcus, and those are the three main characters in the book. So that meeting of all three of them is what throws everything into, you know, into action. And then from there, it allows me to just kind of, you get to know them as that tension is starting to build and things are starting to get a little bit dicey for all of them.
Well, I'm looking through the book, and what I really found interesting are the titles of the chapters, which sort of tell you something about what's going to happen, describe where, and give you a little bit more fear as to what's going to happen.
So, that's a great thing to bring up. I can talk a little bit about what I was thinking with those, if that's what you were.
How did you come up with the chapter titles? Because to be very honest, it was more interesting than people writing, this chapter is this character, this chapter is that character, and then this chapter is that character. I go nuts, and then I go like, oh my God, am I going to have 75 flashbacks? I'm going to lose it. This was better.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'm really glad that worked for you. I mean, a couple things. I think one, I would say, I wanted it to be clear. Everyone has all the three major characters in the book have a style of thinking about the world, and I wanted it to be clear when we got in the chapter who we were with. I didn't want it to be a book where you had to check the name at the top of the chapter and try to remember all the events and all that stuff. I really just wanted that to be in there and part of it so that you could just be reading and kind of going along on the ride with the book. The way I got the idea for the chapter titles was a couple things. My first book, Finny, drew from some 19th century novels, particularly like Charles Dickens novels, and those novels had these great, just funny chapter titles that kind of like teased you with what was going to happen but didn't quite tell you what was going to happen. Like, he'll have a title like Chapter 34, in which a strange man arrives after I have a drink of ale or something like that kind of teases you with, like, oh, who's this strange man that's going to come? And my understanding was that Dickens did that because his books were presented serialized, right? So you'd get, like, three chapters at a time in magazines, and then it wouldn't appear as a whole book later. So he'd want to kind of entice readers what this segment's going to be about, the way that a TV show might kind of tease you with a trailer about what's going to happen in this episode or something like that. So I had kind of a more little, I guess I'd say whimsical chapter titles in that first book. And then I got to this new book, and I started just kind of using the numbered chapters, more traditional. But then I realized I like that chapter title thing because, like you said, one thing it does is kind of ground the action. It tells you where you're going to be. This book is all pretty short chapters, and, it takes, it kind of tells you this is the place where this chapter, this action is going to happen. But then I also noticed that in even some kind of thriller and horror writers, there was a little bit more play with chapter titles. People may remember even in The Shining, he did Stephen King did short chapter titles that kind of just told something like, you know, the living room or upstairs or at the doctor's office or whatever. And I love that when I was reading it, because it just is, it gives you this effect almost of like, it's a camera lens that's like flashing to this room and something important or interesting happens there, and then you cut and then you move to this other thing. And it gives you a sense of pacing, I feel like, and a sense that something important is going to happen in each time that lens flicks on and we're seeing these people.
Can you hold for 1 second? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Hello? Yeah, I'm on the air. I'm on the radio. So are you. That's okay. RIFFYONE at optonline.net. Okay. Bye. Do you believe? Sorry, that was the surgeon.
Yes, that's okay. That's okay.
I get people, and I told them, I said, I'm on the air at 2 o'clock with this famous author. Do you? I said, so are you now. So she's like, oh, don't worry about it.
Okay, well, I'm glad she was understanding. So in any case, that with the chapter titles, that was really the thing that I had in mind, was this kind of being able to move quickly from one scene of interest or action to another. And
yeah, but just some of the titles, like The Truth or Waiting, and some of them actually had settings, so you sort of could picture. And then when it says Blank's Room or The Dump, I was like, oh, my God, this is scary. You could you could actually do a whole book just on the one chapter alone. It's great. So,
oh,
Julia,
you.
I mean, yeah, it made it easier for me to understand. But to be very honest, as I was reading the book, I would never give this one away, but that's beside the point. I've got a whole bunch of people that want to read it. But I write in my books. I write everywhere. There's like little doodads and notes. Okay, so what happened that made him? Yeah. Well, that's because my mom used to make me take notes on when I was reading a book. I had to read like 8 books a week when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. So it was drilled into you early.
Not only was it drilled into me, but I never had to write a book report because they were always already done, so it didn't matter.
Oh, that even makes it better.
No, she was tough, but that's okay. So what happened that made her mother angry with her? And her mother used to put her down a lot. Why was that?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And
that adds to her insecurities.
I hope so. I mean, I hope part of, like we were talking about before, I said, I didn't want to go spend a long time in the book building up the past of, like, telling about the childhood and everything. But then as the action's moving forward, you get these little glimpses into the other characters around the main characters that hopefully fill them out a little bit. So with her mother, I mean, I think, you know, as Julia kind of, as the book alludes to a little bit, she always felt a little bit like kind of a sideshow to her brother, who was kind of more competent and, you know, and sort of like a little bit more, he stole the spotlight a little bit in the family, let's say. And so she always had that thing. And then there's an event that you find out early on, pretty early on in the book, that a pretty tragic thing that just breaks up the family in a lot of ways. And Julia's brother loses his life. And in a lot of ways, what happens is Julia's mother then, instead of ignoring Julia or treating her like the sideshow, like I said, she starts to resent her and blame her. And that's that flip in her mother. And so part of the thing was, I wanted this book to be, like you said, a page-turning thriller with you know, short scenes that builds the action quickly. But then I wanted to try to bring in some of this character stuff as well that I love, and I love in other types of books, and, you know, bring in families and bring in the psychology and the background and all that stuff. And that was the fun, is like, you know, we meet her mother in the course of Julia having violence threatened and different stuff, but you get this little glimpse then into her family life, that this switch happened where she had been kind of ignored, and then all of a sudden all of the hostility and resentment was focused on her because of what happened to her family. And that that felt very tough and sad, but also to me, I could see how that could happen in a family where something like that happened.
I know. So she doesn't want to go home, and she resents going home.
Yeah.
And when she does come home, it creates another big scene that doesn't quite work out either.
It's not a nice place for her to be anymore because of what's happened to her family. So she has this thing where it's like she's, you know, it's her first year in college. Everyone's going home for Thanksgiving, and she's thinking, it's not really a place I want to be. And then where do I go? Who can I be with? Because of what's happened to her family, she's really lost touch with a lot of the people in her life. So it leaves her stranded and vulnerable. And then, like you said, I think coming back to what we were talking about earlier, it kind of opens her to maybe turning to some people more strongly than she would if she had her head on straight, as it were.
Well, not too many people have their heads on straight anymore.
That's right. I don't know. I'm just speculating. I have no idea what it feels like to have my head on straight. So
if we all did in every way, the world would be so boring. What can I say? A little spice is good. Yeah.
That is a very positive way to spin it, so I'll go with that.
I try so hard to be different, and I am. My nephews think I'm quite different.
Family's the first person to tell you when you're different.
Well, when you have three teenage nephews and they think you're cool because you don't look like other, like your other aunts because you dress like a teen, and you can because you're little, mm-hmm. and they call you mm-hmm. their hoochie-coochie cool aunt, that's okay. I think that's pretty.
I've been called that in the past as well. I don't know why it happens. It's just, you know, maybe it's just a personal thing.
That maybe it's just because we are young at heart and whatever. You're young. I'm just
so,
young
yeah.
at heart or something. Okay, so she has a best friend, correct? And who is the one?
Well, yes, she has a friend. Her roommate in college takes on the role of best friend because she's really, in a lot of ways, removed herself. But her roommate is this kind of fun-loving, you know, very a little bit more, I guess, adventurous and open to. And she likes to talk about, you know, sex and the social world of the school a lot and that kind of, and so she kind of pulls Julia in a little bit. It was a way to get Julia to come out of herself a bit, yeah. So I'm sorry, what were you going to? Yeah. So this is Lynette, right?
Yeah. What did they want? Doesn't say a word here. I'm just looking at something that, you know, you know how your life goes in a whatever?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at this pre-op clearance from my doctor, and it doesn't say anything. It just says nothing. Physical pre-op clearance. Doesn't say anything. Oh, well, I'll call them later and deal with that.
Yeah, it's never completely clear, right?
It's not. There's nothing on it. It just says whatever. Okay, when they're going to get me later. So the characters in this book are cleverly written. We don't want to get into too much about one specific character. But what are some of the incidents that, you know, Julia, you know, has this thing between Sam and Marcus. She sort of likes both of them. She sort of has a thing for both of them in her own way. But when kids go to college, I know, what are some of the things that they need to be alerted about or careful about? Because what happens on the college, on the campus of the college, it alerts everyone in general that they need to be careful, whether it's what happened in the book, well, we can talk about that. What do kids have to be aware of that they have to, you know, pitfalls of getting, of the dangers sometimes of walking alone or whatever in this particular book or in college? What do they have to know?
So, I mean, probably a college counselor would be a much better person than I would to answer in terms of, like, how a school can do that or a policy. I mean, you know, I just kind of tell stories, so I don't really I don't know as much about from that side of it. I would say, you know, in this book, I mean, it's really I more kind of wanted to present a person who was open to some things happening that maybe somebody else who wasn't so stirred up would be open to. And so particularly, you know, again, for listeners, there are these characters, Sam and Marcus. So early on, Julia meets Marcus, who is another college student, a freshman like she is, and he's probably more the choice that you would expect for her at first. He's kind of a little bit more shy and awkward and sort of more the way she is, and there's a sweetness to the way that they are together. And then Sam, this older man who's, he's about 40 years old and works at the college but is not a student, he kind of steps in and he seems a little bit more intense, a little darker, but he has this appeal to him and even a sex appeal to him that Marcus doesn't have. And he also seems to understand something about Julia's sadness, about some of the darker side of Julia that she kind of tries to keep hidden through her kind of quirky sense of humor and some of that stuff. And so he almost seems like he reaches through some shield to get to her, and it really flips her social life on its head because she moves toward him. And then what happens is that there's sort of then some odd things start happening to her.
Yeah.
Some things that are a bit threatening, and you know, at first they're just seem a little bit innocuous or lighter, and then they kind of get more serious and darker as we move forward. And then Marcus starts acting strange, who's the other college freshman. And then some things start happening to Sam, and then some things start happening to Marcus. And then it's not clear where it's all coming from. And she knows it has something to do with, like, what's going on in her life, but it's not, since, like I said, you know, Julia only sees her own situation, but the reader can kind of see all three. It's not clear to her why these things are happening. And there's always that thing also, as everyone has, you know, something weird or disturbing happens to you, and the tendency is to kind of explain it away, say, oh, that was a coincidence, or I just left the window open, or that kind of thing. And, you know, and you don't think about it. But we, as the readers, and you know, me as the writer, those things start to add up after a while, and you start to think, maybe it's something more than that. But, you know, she doesn't know. They're both of these characters, I mean, both Marcus and Sam have faced difficulties in their own lives and have their own reasons for maybe acting a little bit strangely. And they both do. They've both faced some kind of difficult losses in their lives. All three of the characters have. And so part of what the book does is kind of then touch on what, you know, what's happened to each of them as you're trying to get closer to the heart of what this violence is, what's going to happen, and whether, you know, in the end, it's going to get Julia.
That's what's scary, but you don't know who's going to get who. And then, basically, if anybody thinks they're going to figure it out, they're not.
They might.
They're not going to figure it out. They might figure it out, but they're not going to figure out the ending. I mean, seriously, they're not.
Oh, yeah,
so let's get to the title. The Preservationist. Why did you choose that as a title? Which definitely does fix.
I'm sorry, what was the last thing you said?
It definitely does fix.
Oh, good. I'm glad that worked for you. Yeah, the title, and that's a great question. I think it gets to a lot of this, the different kind of issues in the book that it looks at. So, there are a couple different answers. I'd say one, that the title most literally refers to Sam, who's the older character that I talked about before, who is one of these suitors of Julia. And so Sam, he's obsessed with preserving things. He saves things that are, you know, that his mother gave him 30 years ago. He saves all kinds of things in his drawers. Mm. He keeps these weird notes of like things that have happened to him. And he's so afraid of losing anything. He's just lost so much in his life that it's like he can't deal with the idea of anything else being gone. So he preserves everything. And he's known as the preservationist in the book because that's how he sees himself. He refers to himself that way because he keeps pictures around of, you know, good memories from when he was a child and all this stuff. Mm. And even in himself, he has these odd habits of, like, he likes to kind of look youthful. He likes to put creams and lotions on his face that help, you know, get wrinkles away around his eyes. And he plucks hairs from his eyebrows and does all kinds of stuff. He wants to stay young. He feels that dating Julia will keep him young, will keep him away from the loss that really scares him in life. So that's literally the meaning. But also, I think more broadly, hopefully, it kind of refers to all the different characters. They've all lost things in their life, and they all want to preserve something in the book. And I think kind of the irony of the book is that while they're also intent on preserving something, the action of the book moves away from that toward destruction. I mean, everything moves toward violence and catastrophe. So they're all so desperate to keep something alive while they're heading toward the opposite of that. And so I hope, like, you know, with any title, I hope that it's not like an answer or something that you can interpret in one way, but something that kind of opens the book to people. You know, it's like, it tells people this is a kind of area that the book's going to look at, but it doesn't say this is what the book's about or this is the, you know, how to interpret it or something like that. So that was kind of thing. And I also, I like a lot of I like simple titles. There's some more complicated titles I like, but I, you know, a title that kind of captures some of the, areas of inquiry that a book will have and a character. I liked that Sam was at the center in the title because he's a character that I think might be a bit different for people, different than other characters you might see in the genre. So that all was there.
He draws you in. That's the fun part. He draws you in at the beginning. He draws you in. So you start to really like him. Yeah, he's an eyeball.
Yeah.
He's interesting. But Julia draws you in another way, and so does Marcus. And in a sense, the title fits all three of them.
Yeah, I hope.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. It fits all three of them. To me, it does. In different ways, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like the idea that the title can, like, have different meanings, to different people in the book, to different readers, all of that kind of thing.
Well, she seems to be just trying to preserve her sanity in her life and preserve
mm-hmm.
some kind of semblance to find somebody that cares about her, because her family doesn't, so she can't preserve that. So through one of these two or somebody else, maybe eventually, you never know, she'll kind of get back to where she was before and come back to who she thinks she really is, if she can figure that out.
I think she hopes for that's a lovely way to say it. I think that's what she would like in the book, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she would like, to have her parents back, but who knows? Okay, let's
mm-hmm.
change veins, because we're not going to tell
mm-hmm.
anybody anymore, because they have heard enough and it's none of their business the rest of this. Okay.
Okay.
When you did this particular novel, and this guy is definitely paranoid, delusional, and all the rest of it,
mm-hmm.
did you have to do any research into this to get it, to learn about this character, or does this strictly come from your brilliance?
I don't know if I could take credit for that. Most people have other adjectives that they like to apply to me beside that. But I would say that I don't do a lot of formal research. I'm not, they always talk about, like, you should write what you know. And for me, for a long time, that idea just intimidated me a lot. I didn't know what I knew about. I feel like I'm not a person who knows that much. I feel like I'm the type of person, like, if you ask me how to get to Main Street, I'll start coughing until somebody else answers the question, because I always just feel uncomfortable about my level of factual knowledge in the world. So I really fiction supports that way of going about my life, which is that it is a story, and that I'm more interested in the kind of emotional truth of it than the factual truth of it. And so I don't do a lot of formal research. I did, like I said, I read a lot of books about violence and psychology and psychology of violence. Really, probably more fiction, honestly, than nonfiction. Definitely more fiction than nonfiction. And so. In that sense, I guess that's research, but I'm not, like, I didn't do something where I was cataloging serial killers or taking, having detailed files about things like that. But I wanted to just slowly, over the course of my reading and thinking about it, just get closer to the kind of mindset that a person might have in this situation and who might be a part of this, the kind of events that occur in this book and that are described in the book. It really was a combination of reading, trying to just understand that mindset, and then it also was a gift to the story for me. This idea that people can have different versions of reality. Both you can have a different version of reality than somebody else in the room, but
yeah.
you even have multiple versions of a reality within yourself. And that was the thing that really helped the story of the book, because there may be things that people feel about the world that they just want to keep down, that they might know somewhere deep inside themselves. And I think this is somewhat true of all the characters, not just the one who ends up perpetrating violence in the book. But I think it's true of life for most people, that there are things we prefer to keep as deep down and hidden as we can. And most of the time we don't think about them. And only in our blackest moments, when we're forced to, do we have to confront those things? And that just seemed to me, so like writing a book like this, a psychological book, what you can do is take things that might be a very small part of your life or feel a little bit familiar to you, but blow it up within a character. I mean, you know, especially with some of the characters in this book, with Sam and with Marcus to some extent, they both have pretty clear life philosophies that are, I think, like a little bit eccentric or extreme. And I think some of the philosophies will feel a little bit familiar to readers, but then part of the fun of the book is, like, I can take that to an extreme in a character and see how that affects that whole person's life. So that was really, those were the ways I think I was thinking about how to deal with some of the psychological stuff. And I'm just always interested in psychology. It's just something that's always been an area of real fascination to me. And, you know, that's something that is particularly just tested or strained or focused on in a psychological thriller like this, because you're asking, why would someone do something like this? Who would do something like this? All those questions, and what makes someone think this way, that, you know, it just brings you close to that.
Well, each one, Sam and Marcus and Julia Wells, Sam and Marcus, actually, I think it, besides being a preservationist and hoarding things, I think in his way, in his own mind, he was preserving the way he thinks people should act towards him and act in general. And he was sort of, you know, both of them manipulating scenes that, you know, you could play the same scene in a book and two people could read it and they could read it differently. Or you could see something happen outside and the police could say to you, well, what happened? And two witnesses will see the same scene and it'll be different.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly something. And the structure of the book, the way that I'm constantly moving between the point of view of the different characters, kind of emphasizes that aspect of the world that you're bringing up, which is that, you know, I mean, it's that Rashomon thing, like no two people see the same event the same way. You're always filtering it through your experience, your perspective, what's going on with you at that time, all these different things about the world, and that and especially when there's this ambiguity about what's going on, that becomes so important then. Like, your point of view then becomes extremely important because you're wondering, is that right? Is that the objective thing that happened? And you're not really sure the whole time until very late in the book who has the right story, who is the right answer.
That's exactly true. So let me go on to the next one. When you wrote this particular book, when you outlined or decided to write it, did you create the character of Sam and then Marcus and Julia and the parents separately and then intertwine them to write them, or did you just write?
That's such an interesting question, really. I think in some ways I knew that they were going to be related. But like I was saying before, I like to take time to kind of just develop the characters outside of the book. So, you know, take time just writing about them without having the burden of having to tell a story that moves along with a certain pacing. So I just want to get to know them. At first, it was almost like I was writing two or three different books. There's this kind of... With Julia, in some ways, there's this kind of gentle coming-of-age thing that's happening to her and a sadness, and how do you deal with, you know, a difficult life event and growing up and that thing. And so I was kind of developing that on one side. And then there's Sam, who has this kind of very odd life and particular way of preserving things and everything. And then there's Marcus, who's just so reeling and distraught and full of guilt over this thing that happened to him. And so it was almost like I was just, and then I'd write like scenes just to start where it wouldn't even be in the story, but it would just be, well, what happens when Julia and Marcus go on a walk, or what happens when Julia has coffee with Sam? And I just kind of would write that and get that. And then at a certain point, you know, I think, especially, you know, if you're writing the kind of book that I am, which you want to just people to be a page turner, that you realize you need a story that's kind of the anchor, or almost like you could picture it like a clothesline that everything else that you've done gets hung on in a way. So all these characters are kind of draped across this central line that takes you through the book. So that So after I spent time developing the different characters, that was when I said, you know, I want this to be a thriller plot. I want there to be some, you know, some mystery, and then some wondering about how it's going to work out. Is, you know, is our main character going to get killed? That kind of stuff. And so that was when I knew they were all going to be related, and I had them kind of talking and different things. And then once I got that plot, that was when that really pulled the thing tight, where then everyone, every scene I show has to somehow relate to that central story of, like, how is this going to work out? Is she going to get hurt? That kind of thing.
Oh, boy. That's a lot. Okay, I have a question. Your book, I was very lucky. What happened was I was asked to join Partners in Crime by the people that are in charge of it. And sometimes when you get these emails, you're not really sure who they are. So I said, who in heaven blazes is Partners in Crime? Because my mom's home health care agency was Partners in Care. And
They probably would not ask you to review a crime novel.
No, they just wanted me to review them, but that's okay because they saved my. They were the most amazing home health care agency in the world. They were really good.
No,
so I'm saying
great.
Like Partners in what? So I joined Partners in Crime, and I asked for a book, and they wouldn't give it to me because they said that there were too many people. And I said, so what did you ask me to join for if you won't give me Faye Kellerman?
right.
So then I went through all of the books that were available, and I said, okay, this one is definitely me.
Mm-hmm.
And they have never read any one of my reviews before. Yours comes out next Thursday, so that's when I have to post it. And I posted one already for them. I don't remember which one it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm posting another one on Friday, which is a really good book, Abraham Lincoln, Public Enemy Number One. It's one of their books, and it's two authors,
great.
Anthony and Walker. Excellent. So how did you come to find them? How did you learn about Partners in Crime? They're really good.
So, yeah, they're great. And Cheryl and Gina have been wonderful there just really supportive of the book. So this was one of these things that they're hired by my publisher, and, you know, they were very supportive of the book, and they organize a lot of the reviews and interviews and different things that I'm doing with the book, and so it's just kind of a series of things. So I believe I think that the type of company, I think they'd be known as like a blog tour company, maybe.
Blog tour book launches they do, yeah.
So they particularly, I think, focus on then reaching out to kind of online venues who are interested in the type of book that I'm writing, and kind of connecting me then with people who are also interested. And so they're, you know, a great company, and I think for people who are interested in that type of book, you can see what they're reading, and you can, you know, they have a website and everything, and that it'll just give you an idea of the types of books that they handle and that are out there.
It's all mysteries and crime, and what happens now,
mm-hmm.
Every other week or so, they send me an email, and
mm-hmm.
I'm not taking anybody else on right now,
mm-hmm.
but I will, because every single title, every title that I've chosen from them has been first rate, I have to tell you. And yours was the first one that I got, was The Preservationist. And Abraham Lincoln, Public Enemy Number One, was great. John Land is he knows me personally. He just sends the book. So they're doing one on the 10th Circle, and I just said, would you like me to do, you know, a blog, whatever, take one in January, whenever. And, of course, whatever. We don't have to send you the book. No, we have to send me the book. I already read it. Don't worry about it. I'm reading it now.
Great. You're already there.
Yeah, I already got it.
Yeah.
But every single title, The Devil in the Hole by Charles Salzberg, is unbelievable.
Terrific.
There's not one
great
title that I've read that I wouldn't say, you know, definitely they're great. I know John Land is part of their blog tours. I know quite a few authors are part. How did you get Pegasus to take your book? It's the hardest thing for new authors to get a traditional publisher, known as Pegasus, to take your first, to take the book.
Yeah, so it's my second book. So the first, my first book was A Random House title, and then this this one is Pegasus title, and particularly the Pegasus Crime imprint, which you know they're doing a lot of work with now. And really, the answer is kind of boring. I mean, I have an agent who's wonderful, and she sent the book to them and thought it would be great for their list. They were really excited and have been just wonderful. They launched it as a lead title this fall, and so all of that is kind of standard, but just has been a great experience all the way around. And you know, just was very lucky that they liked it so much, and have been so supportive of it, and you know, done things like working with Partners in Crime and different people to you know, tell people about the book. And you know, they're having a launch party tonight in New York. So if any of your listeners are there, it's going to be at Mysterious Bookshop tonight. So it's been great with them.
Oh, that's great. You know, that's one of the publishers from one of the other authors called me today. And that was the other question is, how do you pick a good literary agent? Because she was asking me that for that. For Mark Schaffer, Redemption Road, the book was fantastic, pretty much in the same genre as yours. And I gave her the names of some small publishing companies, but I really, you know, I know literary agents, but I don't know anyone that I would say to her, this is who you should call, because it's hard. You need to be careful with that. So how did you pick the person that you have? How do you know which one, know where to find her?
I was very lucky also. I mean, so I went to the Iowa Writers Workshop for grad school for writing, and while I was there, you know, that's a program where you get to meet some agents and editors who come through, kind of, you know, looking for authors and talking about their agencies. And what happened was while I was there, I met one agent who I had a nice conversation with. I didn't have a book to send her at the time because I was just a student and really not far out of college. And then I worked on a book, and this was my first novel, and I finished it a number of years after I'd graduated the program. I guess I graduated in 2004. I think I finished the book in 2007 or 2008 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to her saying, you know, I have this book. I'd love to be able to show it to you, see if it's something you'd be interested in representing. And found out that she was retiring from agenting, so that was a bit of a disappointment. But a woman was taking over her agency, and who had, you know, been an editor and then an agent for a while, and she said she'd be interested in taking a look at the book. Sounded interesting to her. And then so I sent it to her, and she became my agent, Aisha Pandey. She's been my agent since then, and has been great. So that was kind of just a lucky thing. I mean, when I was, you know, looking for agents, I sent books to different people, and the ones who were interested, I had lunch with them, and or you know, went to their office and talked and heard their ideas about the book. And part of it is just you kind of. You know, I mean, some people say it's kind of like dating or something. You just kind of get a feel for who seems the right person for you and that sort of thing. And this was just, we had a good feeling. We got along well. We could joke together. I remember at the time we first met, she was reading Middlemarch, which was wonderful. Nobody reads Middlemarch except for me, I feel like. And so I was very happy to see somebody else reading kind of a, I guess, classic but obscure book from the 19th century in some ways. So, yeah, that was really, it just, we had a good rapport, good feeling, and that's kind of where we went. And then, you know, and also for anyone who's kind of looking for an agent who might be listening, I mean, also it's, you know, it's, you'll also know then, you know, who are people who can, who are really, you know, good at the job and everything. And that's you know, so it's that combination of, I guess, of just getting someone who you really get along with and have a good rapport with and are, you know, who likes your work and who's, you know, who's good at what they do.
That's even better. And if they answer the phone and they don't do everything on email, that does help also.
Yeah. And also not calling too much because then they might answer the phone less.
That's true. You don't want to be in pain, which you know, you get anxious, I guess. I guess sometimes when they present a book, that's the other thing. If the literary agent sends a book to Pegasus or Random House, how long does it take before you know, and can you send it to other publishing companies, or you have to wait for the response?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and that varies extremely widely between different publishers, different books, different. I mean, there's so many factors in that. I just was very fortunate with both of the books, I don't think this is a normal case, but the offers came in really quickly, and I think that was just, I mean, it's a testament to my agent and really. Yeah, finding the right people to go to, and just being lucky that they read it on the right day at the right time and had an opening in their list that they could, you know. Both times it just fit really well. I got to work with great people both times, and that just that was lucky. But I've also heard, just the other side of it is I've also heard people will send in a book and not hear something for a year, and then a year later a publisher might be interested. So I don't think it's like if you don't get an offer in a week or something really short, I don't think people should feel like, oh, there's no chance. I mean, because most books, it really is a long process, especially now that publishers are getting, they're kind of, the publishing industry is so tough, they're all collapsing together. So you have, it takes a while to acquire a book. You got to go through a lot of people and get approval and all that different stuff, and they got to really feel like they can do something for the book because, you know, that's the book that they want to take on. So I think that can take a long time as well.
Depends on what they're looking for. I know. I have to announce next Thursday at 3:00. Keep changing my times. At October 24th at 3 o'clock, I'll be interviewing New York Times bestselling author Colin Eggers, De Clance Cross. At 4 o'clock, I'll be interviewing bestselling poet Alan Vestberg, The Inspirer. It's a book of poems and stories. It's really quite interesting. Then I'm going to be taking some time off until November 14th when I'll be back with Archer Mayer. In between there, I hope everybody has a great Halloween and a great whatever, and a great couple of weeks. What's your next title, and what are you writing next?
I'm working on a new book that it's a very odd thriller. It's different, but has suspense in it, and I probably can't say much more than that. Too early to commit, but it's in progress right now. I haven't finished it yet, but that's on its way.
I expect to get it first, though.
Yeah, I'll definitely
I definitely expect to get it before it comes out so that I can read it and tell everybody how wonderful it is. But I'm sure that if you're going for Partners in Crime, I'm sure they're going to tell me. But you know what? It's better if you send it to me because then I'll know I'll get it. If too many people like some of the books that I like, and I wind up on the short end of the stick, and that's not fair.
This was great.
Okay, so really, before we close, I know that you write articles for different magazines, and you like to do editing. Do you do professional editing for people if they need books edited?
I do. I do some freelance work with editing, and writers will sometimes come to me when they want to be submitting a book to an agent or an editor just to have another pair of eyes to look at it. And on my website, which is www.justincramon.com, my last name is Kramon, and that there's information about that. I do visits to writing groups and things like that, and I do some of that as a kind of a sideline thing with the writing.
Oh, that is great. I'll have to remember that.
It's a pleasure for me to really, one of the things is sometimes at certain points in your work, you get very isolated from other people and writers. And one of the great things with teaching writing and doing the editing is that just the interaction that I get to have with other writers, which has just really been a very fun and very rewarding thing for me. And that's kind of one of the reasons to do it, is just to be able to have that part of my life, I guess.
Well, that is true, because I'm a writing and reading staff developer, and I love reading novels before they come out and telling authors what I think they need to improve or not improve.
Mm-hmm.
So the question would be, before we close, do they listen when you tell them to change something?
Well, I always tell people it's just one opinion. That's my approach to it, is I'll give you my opinion from the way, you know, what's been helpful for me and what I feel. If you don't like it, please disregard it. That's always what I say. So, yeah, so I feel I've had great – most of the people I work with, you know, we have a long relationship because I like to work with people I get along with. They like to work with me if they get along with me. And so I think it's a real – collaborative thing that becomes nice, and then if it doesn't feel like it's going to be that way, then I think then I'm not the right person for them. So I think that most of the people that I work with are people that I end up, you know, we have a long correspondence, and that's been a great
thing. I put this information later on my Facebook thing, because I run a review site on Facebook. It's called Reviewing Your Book. Outstanding authors, positive opinions, and you're only allowed to post positive reviews, no negative stuff, because I don't want to see it. Yeah, I'm really bad with that.
Right.
And then I have another review site called Need a Review. These are my two sites on Facebook, and Need a Review is for people that need reviews. It's not to post reviews. It's not to post your links. It's just saying, I need a review on this book and who would like to review. And I have a whole bunch of people that review books. And I am very proud to say that my new book that came out last week, Lies, Betrayals, and Fear, has gotten its first 5-star review. Yay.
Oh, wonderful.
I would love you to read it. It's Faces 3, and it's told from the point of view of the dead person behind the mausoleum or stone. It's my little craze. I've been told that it's kind of dark and kind of scary, and I don't care, but it's really good. And my magazine, MJ Magazine, the second one, it should be coming out at the end of the month or beginning of next month for sure. And you're having an event tonight, so tell everybody where.
Oh, so I'm having an event at the Mysterious Bookshop tonight in Manhattan at 7 p.m. It's a book launch party. My publisher is hosting an open bar there, so you can come and see what I'm like drunk, which is pretty much the same as I'm like sober. but it'll be an interesting – I think it'll be a fun night, so I'm really looking forward to it and really glad that they're – very happy they're doing it.
Well, the next time you're up in my county, upstate Westchester, I have to know, because if you come to any of the bookstores up here, I'm first one online.
Oh, great. And it's a date.
Yeah, we have White Plains and we have Central Park Avenue. We have a whole bunch of Barnes & Nobles up here that are really big.
Oh, great.
And
that sounds
good. I could actually tell you that after I'm done with this other thing that I have to go through at the end of the month, if you ever really – the one in Central Avenue probably would be totally ecstatic, and the manager's name is Dave. The manager's name is Dave, and you have to tell him you know me, and he has to tell me if he actually does it, he owes me because, they don't do a lot of book signings, but if I said there was a best-selling author that wanted to come there, they probably would flip out, and then they would have to be nicer to me, too. What can I say?
That's good. Yeah, we could. Yes, that's good. They have favors from the right people, right?
They need me. They need me more than whatever. But I want to thank you so much, and I appreciate this. This is great, and I really hope you have a great event.
Thank you so much, Fran. I really enjoyed it. It was great to talk to you. And,
I was great talking to you too, Justin. And I'm waiting for your next one. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks so much.
And I'll be back next week, Thursday. Everybody have a nice night.